Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome in to Tech Talk. I'm Dave Williams. Tech Talk, our regular exploration of the world of technology from a blindness and partially sighted perspective. Don't forget, of course, we want to hear your thoughts and your voice notes as well. So do not hesitate in dropping us a line to techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or you can attach an audio clip. It's the same email address, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. This week, we'll be hearing about a new app called Now and Then, designed to improve access to heritage and tourism. Callum Stoneman will be taking a look at Mastodon, the social media platform, and RNIB's very own Ben Breen, Sightless Combat himself, will be telling us about some of the gaming options that you might want to check out over Christmas. So that's all to come this time on Tech Talk. So welcome in to our co-hosts, Tazzy Marshad, Callum Stoneman. Are you ready for the festive season, guys? Are you all your technology orders placed and you're bracing yourself for those tech support requests from friends and family?
Yeah, I think so. All sorted. It's all getting there slowly.
Yeah, all good here. The Christmas decorations are up already. I know some will say that's too early, but nope, they're up. The smart plugs are here, ready for the lights. And yeah, the phone is ready for the tech support. I know one particular family member is getting an iPad for Christmas. Not from us, but I'm sure my Boxing Day and the little gap in between Christmas and New Year will be there helping them set up.
That's a very generous gift that somebody will be receiving. I remember when my wife got her first, I think it was iPod Touch, and I knew that the setup was going to be painful, you know, because when you take it out the box and there are lots and lots of questions, aren't there? Lots of screens and you've got to create an account and blah, 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 you know, and it just seems to go on forever. And I knew that would put her off. So I took the liberty of, when the package arrived, actually unboxing it, doing the setup, putting all her favourite music on there, and then turning it off, putting it back in the box. I actually managed to find somebody who could shrink wrap it for me, so that on Christmas morning, when she opened her new MP3 player, as an iPod, I think, it was already ready to go, and dare I say it, even loaded with Michael Bublé.
Nice.
For her, maybe. Excellent. So, yeah, it always pays to a little bit of preparation, particularly if you're giving a technology gift to someone who might not be the most technological. There may be a reason why they don't already have a smart speaker. So just be ready for the questions, I think, would be my advice.
Yeah, I think, you know, either prepare or just, you know, keep the receipt, or just be ready to invoice people.
Absolutely. Oh, there you go. Absolutely. Good plan, Callum.
Okie dokie. Right, well, strap yourself in. It's Tech Talk. You would have had to have been living under a rock in recent weeks to hear about the fallout following Elon Musk's acquisition of Twitter, and many blind and partially sighted people have been seeking alternative social media platforms. Mastodon seems to be the poison of choice. Callum Stoneman, you're going to be having a look at Mastodon, but you've got some reservations.
And, I'm a technical person anyway, and, you know, obviously from doing this show, we want to kind of stay on top of things. So I am going to have a play with it and see what it's like, and possibly, I'm guessing you're going to ask me to do a demo. But it's obviously, it's very much a personal thing, you know, how you feel about Twitter and Elon Musk and the interesting time that we're in at the minute with Twitter, shall we say, to put it politely. But I just think, for me personally, I'm not really that fussed about having another social media platform, really. It's a similar reason to why I didn't kind of go on Clubhouse a couple of years ago, when everyone seemed to be jumping on that. I just kind of feel, I have Facebook for keeping up with friends and family. I have Twitter for keeping up with kind of the industry, you know, the tech industry and the disability communities kind of thing. And then WhatsApp and iMessage for kind of private conversations. And I'm kind of happy with that. I don't feel the need for another thing. And I also, I don't really know what I'd gain by kind of leaving Twitter. And, you know, I think, as I said previously, when we sort of touched on this on the Daily Connect recently, I understand why people are leaving Twitter. And as I said, it's a personal choice, but I think we kind of lose out from doing that. It's not like Elon Musk is really going to be too fussed, but we lose out on that following. And, you know, some people will move over to services like Mastodon with you, but not everyone will. So that's why I'm a little bit skeptical. And it doesn't seem as easy for people to get involved as Twitter does. You know, Twitter or Facebook or these other social networks, you kind of sign up, you create an account, you put in some details, it magically finds all your friends and people you know and people that you're interested in. You add them and you see their posts. Whereas Mastodon, you've got to kind of join a server, and then that server is like your community, but then you can see people outside of that server as long as they're connected. And imagine trying to explain that to, you know, your parents. That's why I'm a little bit skeptical of how this is going to catch on, because at the minute it seems to be quite techies that are moving over there, from what I've read, you know, purely based on tweets that I've seen and posts that I've seen.
Tasneem Arshad, you tend not to use social media. Why is that?
I don't know. I'm just not really a social media person. I use WhatsApp and I have used Facebook in the past. And, you know, I do sort of peruse and research and read things. So I'm not a complete hermit with social media, but I guess it's more capacity for me. And yeah, I'd rather speak to people in person. But, you know, I do enjoy using WhatsApp and various different things. But I think it's important to have the flexibility and the choice and the personal preferences. You know, it's wonderful to know that various platforms in social media are accessible or can be made accessible, or there are things happening with accessibility. So I think it's good that the blind community has that choice. And as you say, Callum, imagine trying to explain this to your parents, that the Mastodon, it doesn't sound appealing to me from what you said. And I wouldn't really want to be exploring it personally myself, as somebody who's, you know, fairly green with social media stuff. Twitter still seems more of a helpful setup than trying to have this more sort of local community with Mastodon and then trying to, you know, do all this networking. It does sound very much like a maze.
Tasneem, I don't really go on social media to connect with my parents. I've got other ways of doing that. For me, as a blind person, the thing I like about social media, and particularly Facebook, are the groups, because I'm able to join a community around a topic that interests me, whether that's running or playing the piano or something else. And the fact that I'm blind isn't a barrier to entry in the way that sometimes it can be in the physical world. Obviously, we need to make those efforts in the physical world, but that's the power of social media from my perspective, that I have been able to engage with communities that, you know, I can relate to without my blindness being a barrier, or, you know, just the business of getting there, or, you know, trying to meet people or find the entrance and all that stuff. I mean, does that resonate with you at all?
Similar to yourself, Dave, it's a great platform to, as Callum put it, you know, finding out stuff about the industry, about what's going on. But yeah, I think it's, again, it's very much about personal preference, isn't it? That's the beauty of social media, though, isn't it? That you can engage and it can be more accessible, and you can do that on the move. And, you know, you can put as much or as little as you want to share publicly. I guess that's another thing for me. I don't really, you know, posting things and about what's going on in my life and what I'm doing, I'd just rather get on and do it rather than sort of share it with the rest of the world. It's just, I'm not that type of person. So, but it's great if you are, and if you want to go, you know, it's great that option is available.
Callum Stoneman, do you recognise any of those community aspects? Obviously, lots of people have got different ways of using social media. Some people want to share photographs of their most recent meal. I use it for the groups and to pursue subjects that are interesting to me. Other people use it as a way of getting news, as problematic as that can be. You use Twitter, obviously. What's your purpose there? Do you get involved in groups or subjects that interest you? Are you using it for news? Are you using it to share pictures of your breakfast? What do you do?
Definitely not pictures of me breakfast. But I do use it. I do occasionally post something if I'm up to something interesting, which doesn't happen very often nowadays. But if I'm up to something interesting, then yeah, I might, you know, post about it. I might check in, or I might put a little picture up there. But most of the time, I just use it for Twitter, mainly for, you know, tech industry news. I tend to get a lot of that on my timeline, and that wasn't really intentional, but, you know, I've just ended up following those sorts of people, and then more and more recommendations come up that are similar to that. So that's what it's kind of turned into. You've got to look closely at where that's coming from and make sure that it's accurate. But that's something that, for me, I can kind of get used to. Facebook, though, massively, you know, with the groups that you mentioned, there's a lot of visually impaired groups on Facebook. RNIB have some, of course, the RNIB Connect groups. They are good. They are really good. They've been really useful for me going through university and, you know, becoming kind of improving my independence, which I was quite late to. So it was good to be able to post in there. They're closed groups, or at least the RNIB ones are, and the ones that I'm in. So your friends and family can't necessarily see it if they're not in the groups. So you've got that kind of safe space. But again, that only works because Facebook is such a popular platform. You know, Mastodon has been around for quite a while, but it's only recently that I've heard it being talked about. So it's one of them things for me where everyone's on Facebook, and that community, that connection is why it works so well. But for something like Mastodon, if no one's really kind of joined it yet, then you might have these groups, you might have these spaces, but if there's not many people in them, then there's not as much to talk about and as much of a discussion to be had, and, you know, sometimes sadly as much help available necessarily.
2,000 people an hour signing up last time I checked. I think they were up to about 6 million not long ago. So people are signing up.
It is picking up, yeah.
There are plenty of blind and partially sighted people there. And there are some instances or servers that are, you know, set up by blind people that do attract more blind people. So we look forward to your demonstration, Callum Stoneman, and see if your mind is changed at all.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm open to, as I said, trying it out, and who knows, maybe I'll like it. It's one to watch, I think.
You can find RNIB on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. Let us know, what social media are you using? How do you use it? What do you use it for? techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Callum Stoneman, Tasneem Arshad, thanks a lot. On Tech Talk, we often talk about navigation and how you can use technology to get around outdoors and sometimes indoors. And one person who is at the forefront of developments in this area is Mike Robinson, the founder and creator of the Now and Then app. Hi, Mike. Welcome to Tech Talk. Tell us firstly, what is Now and Then?
Hi. Nice to speak to you. Now and Then is basically something that came out of a university thing that I did a while ago. 3 years ago, I was asked to solve a problem called augmenting reality in tourism. And basically what ended up happening was I built an app that is totally inclusive, that will allow anybody anywhere to negotiate any environment inside or out, anywhere on or off the planet.
Right. Okay. Well, that sounds quite ambitious. So who's it for?
Well, it's designed for everybody. What happened is I know rather a lot of people that have difficulty seeing. I know a couple of blind people. I know people that can't read. I know people in wheelchairs. And it became apparent that it's not possible for people that are differently enabled to negotiate the normal world without doing a lot of research. And I wanted to make it easier for everybody, not just the differently enabled, but those that are ordinarily enabled as well.
Okay, can you just sort of explain a little bit about why you created it? Clearly, there are lots of navigation apps out there, but you're doing something slightly different.
Yeah, let's go right back to brass tacks. When I first started it, augmenting reality in tourism meant I had to find out what was already in existence. It became apparent that nothing's changed for about 50 or 60 years. Most museums, art galleries, or indoor venues simply provide you with a piece of machinery that delivers information when you're on site. You usually have to push buttons to identify what's going on, and it's rather difficult for those venues to maintain the cost of doing that. Basically, they have to pay for equipment. It has to be charged. It breaks down. It gets old and has to be replaced. So I looked at alternatives. Obviously, a mobile phone was the easiest method. And it became apparent when I looked at the mobile phone that my friends, specifically those that couldn't see, do use a mobile phone, but they use audio to guide them around the usage of the mobile phone. And Gavin told me that it was possible to make the app that I was in the middle of designing work for anybody, in the sense that if it triggered on location, it would enable him to walk around an art gallery and be in front of the thing that was being talked about. And I thought that was quite exciting. Gavin since tested it, and he said it was the most liberating experience he's had with regards to an app. So basically what it does is it utilises GPS, that's a global positioning technology, or low energy Bluetooth beacons, or simple instructions to guide people around an environment. It triggers remotely. That means if you're at home, you can mess about with the map and find out what's around and have a look at it. Or if you're out and about, it will tell you what's near to you. And as you move through the environment that's been created as a guided tour, it will actually say you are near this thing and you can hear all about it by enabling the app to do so. Gavin pointed out to me that all other apps in existence that do things like this do not automatically update when they do an update. So I made it compulsory for all pictures, texts, icons, web links, pictures, whatever goes in there to be audio described, which got me involved with a lady called Zoe Partington. And that was in itself quite exciting.
Right. So this is specifically for tourism, obviously with an emphasis on museums and other visitor attractions, using a combination of technologies to provide information about exhibits and heritage in those locations in a way that perhaps other mapping apps might not do.
Not only that, it can do things like guided walks. It can guide you around any environment. It just depends on how the person that builds it frames and uses the interface. It's actually two pieces of kit. One piece of kit is designed for museums, art galleries, walks, venues, to build tours online using a laptop. Makes it far easier for them to do. And the other is the delivery app, which is a mobile phone. But I've since made it possible for individuals to build their own guided tours on a mobile phone. Not so easy for the non-sighted, but it works for everybody else on the mobile phone. They can build their own guided tours as well.
So you are essentially a business now. What is the sort of the model for this? So are you selling subscriptions to the app? Is the onus on the venues to fund this? What's the model there, Mike?
Right. So it's free if you're a venue. So I suggest every single venue everywhere actually uses it as a second string to their bow. If they load the information on, it can be delivered to the general public, the end user, and it costs the venues nothing to create. I've done that specifically so that we make the world more accessible. They do have to pay me somehow. Obviously, that's quite difficult. So I've got to get paid for all of the storage that will be utilised. So a lot of these things will be free and delivered free to the end user. The end user does not pay for the app itself. The delivery app is free, and venues get to choose whether or not they charge for delivery. If they charge, now and then get paid. If they don't charge, now and then doesn't get paid. I am relying on the sorts of venues like the British Museum or something like that that allows free entry but charges for guided tours using handheld machines that they currently let out for about £7. So there'll be in-app purchases available, but there'll also be free guided tours available.
Now, in terms of the usability, you kind of alluded to the traditional audio guide technology, which is, you know, sort of like an old-fashioned telephone handset, I guess, and you walk around a venue and usually there are print numbers up on a wall somewhere, and then you type in the code of the area where you are and it calls up a you know, some information. I remember using one of these in the US, and I had to give them my credit card, and I think it was like a $500 fine or something if I didn't return it to the front desk at the end of the session. So a little bit nerve-wracking. So this clearly overcomes that issue because you're using your own equipment that you don't have to take back at the end of the day. But of course, the benefit of those audio guides is the physical buttons. There are people for whom smartphones are challenging. Do you think there's room for both, or have you thought about those users, how people who do rely on buttons still might take advantage of now and then?
Oh, most certainly. I mean, so I did some qualitative and quantitative research. That means that I went out and asked loads of questions of venues and members of the public. And the qualitative research was based, meaning a bit more honed in, was based around why people don't actually get on with what's there already. So it became apparent that apps for delivery to mobile phones cost a fortune to develop, and the likes of tourism, arts and culture experiences don't have that money anymore. They're no longer supported by government. They have to seek funding. So they're finding it very difficult to do so. But the other pain point is that their users have to download a new app everywhere they go in order to be able to interact with them as an experience. And not everybody's prepared or wishes to do that because they haven't got the space on their mobile phone, or there's too many pictures on it, they've got too many apps on it. And often when they download an app, it doesn't work. And they don't know that until they try it. So the two things that will make Now and Then grow are the fact that it's free to access. It's free to discover what's around you. It's free for any venue, anywhere, to load the content for you to discover. Failing to do so will just mean that they don't have another string to the bow. It won't cost them anything whether they load it or they don't load it. But if they do load it, they can choose whether or not to charge. So if you were the British Museum and faced with a bill for replacing, 100 handheld machines that you push buttons on, it would be definitely cheaper for you to not replace those machines and just load the data into an app like Now and Then, that somebody's going to discover it, find they can use it, and they can still charge for it, which supports whichever venue it's going for if the people using it obviously are prepared to pay for it, which means that content is all important, which is my biggest difficulty at the moment.
Right, so those users who need buttons?
If you're not sighted and you like buttons, you don't need them because a low-energy Bluetooth beacon will activate the screen to say that you are near something.
Oh, okay. So it happens automatically. So as you're walking around, this is what you're saying. So you put the app on your smartphone, if you have a smartphone, and then as you come in range of one of your beacons, then the content will play automatically.
No, it will actually trigger a notification to say that you're there. If you just touch the screen, it will then play.
Right, okay. And tell me about the content then. So who creates the content? Is that going to be human narrated, or is it text-to-speech? What does that sound like?
Okay, so unfortunately, if you own a mobile phone, the only way to make a sound from a button is to use the automated text-to-speech engine on your mobile phone. However, the audio description of pictures, links to external websites, etc., will be audio described by somebody that works for either the gallery or has been commissioned to do so.
Tell us a bit about the Bluetooth beacons, because there are a number of these projects at the moment, and we've featured some of them on Tech Talk, where venues have Bluetooth beacons deployed or installed on their premises, and somebody comes along and does that. Are yours compatible? Are they the same? Are they a completely different standard? And what sort of costs is a venue looking at in terms of those Bluetooth beacons?
At the moment, I received a grant from Smartline and the Inclusivity Project, and I have a few hundred low-energy Bluetooth beacons that I am giving out to venues in order that they can test them and get them running. If they're going to charge for guided tours around their venue, then they'll be able to purchase their own in the future. They're very simple. They're just proximity beacons, so they're not very complicated at all. What happens is your phone gets notified that there's a beacon nearby. It knows what that beacon is because it's been programmed into Now and Then. And simply programming into Now and Then means typing what it is. And it triggers. But when I was working with Gavin and Zoe at the Falmouth Art Gallery, it became apparent that there's an overlap using low-energy Bluetooth beacons. So after some experimentation, it became apparent that it's much better to locate them a fair distance apart and add more points of interest. So if you imagine a point of interest might be a room, and in that room, around the room, you can be guided by voice all the way around to tell you what's in that room. Gavin did that, and he was amazing. He left his dog at the desk with me, and he guided himself round two rooms, stopped in front of pictures, knew exactly where he was, and got basically very excited about it, because previously low-energy Bluetooth beacons don't always trigger at the right time. So we discovered that triggering a beacon, walking into a room, and then giving verbal instructions was a better way of doing it.
You mentioned Falmouth Art Gallery. Where else is Now and Then being used?
Okay, so we did a lot of testing there. We're actually very early in our growth cycle. I only finished the build completely just over a week ago. So we're very early in the growth cycle here. I have won a number of awards for the development of this thing. But so there's a lady called Debbie North. She's a government champion for the disabled. She's put about 16 walks up, I suppose, around the Yorkshire Dales and places like that, signposting for accessibility. I'm working with a lady called Gina Bradbury, who's Julia Bradbury's sister, with a view to placing all Julia Bradbury's walks around the UK on Now and Then. St Ives, the town of St Ives, are talking about creating a digital boardwalk for St Ives. We're in the process of building that, and effectively, St Ives is not a very accessible place if you're blind or you're in wheelchair. So their community interest company are going to create the digital boardwalk and charge for it, with a view to any funds it raises increasing the digital footprint around St Ives, so it becomes easier and easier for people that are differently enabled to get around, to put in tactile pavements and beacons all over the town and basically grow a guide like that. We're also working with Penryn Town. The ex-mayor there, a guy called Chas Wenmouth, runs guided walks around the area. We've got a few of those loaded. I'm also working with the Cornwall Museums Partnership. We've basically did some training with Zoe Partington. She's currently a trustee for the Cornwall Museums Partnership. But unfortunately, I'm only one man. And I've got to try and encourage venues to start trying to build these themselves. It's not very complicated. I designed the app so that it was so simple to use and load that anybody can do it with 5 or 10 minutes instruction. The most difficult point being audio description, because it's really quite important. So as we grow, I'm going to hopefully employ Zoe to do audio training for museums and galleries.
How can blind and partially sighted people, listeners to this programme, experience Now and Then? And if they like it, obviously, hopefully they'll advocate for it to be used in more places. I guess it's a little bit of a catch-22, isn't it? That, you know, you need people to kind of fly the flag for it, but it's hard to do that without having experienced it. So what would you say to folk who want to find out a bit more about what it's like to use?
Okay, well, the app's already available on both the Apple Store and the Google Store. They can download it. They'll only find a few things on there at the moment, as I say, and they're not very interesting because people have tended to load text and pictures. Now, they've had to audio describe the pictures. There are not very many things that link to the internet or do other video things, which are not very important if you're partially sighted or cannot see. Therefore, the textual stuff will be really quite interesting. So I'd recommend you have a look at places like Penryn or St Ives, where somebody's typed in a lot of detail around the history of the place. And if you enable your reader on your mobile phone, you'll find that the app's very, very simple to use.
Okay. Now and Then, available from the Apple App Store and the Google Play Store. And if you're down in the Southwest near one of those locations that have been enabled with support for Now and Then, we would urge you to give it a go and let us know how you get on. Mike, what's the best way for people to learn more and perhaps get in contact with you?
My email's mike@nowthen.co.uk, or they can visit the website, nowthen.uk.
Okay. Mike, Mike Robinson from Now and Then. Thanks very much.
Okay, thank you.
So as we've discussed previously, Mastodon seems to be the social media platform of choice that many people are now turning to, following, let's just say, the recent changes at Twitter. So on this demo, I thought I'd just have a look at getting started with Mastodon. So creating your account, choosing your server and making an account on that server so then you can actually view the content and start using the platform. So we're going to use two apps here. The first one is the main Mastodon app for iOS, and you'll need that to actually create your account. But the thing with the Mastodon app, it's okay, it's usable, but the accessibility is a little bit hit and miss. So we're going to use a third-party app to actually view the content of Mastodon once we have our account, but one thing at a time. So let's go through doing the account first. So I'll go into Mastodon. I'm using an iPhone with VoiceOver on iOS 16. So let's go into Mastodon.
Mastodon, create account button.
So here's the first screen. This is what you'll get when you've installed Mastodon for the first time. We've got create account.
Login button.
Login.
Login button. Create account button.
And that's all we've got on that screen. Simple enough. Create account or login. So I'm going to double tap on create account.
Mastodon is made of users in different servers. Pick a server based on your region, interests, or a general purpose one. You can still chat with anyone on Mastodon, regardless of your servers.
So the first step is to pick a server. And as it says there, you could pick a server based on a number of different things, really. So you pick a server based on your location. So in my case, you know, I could pick a UK specific one or a Northwest specific server if there was that. I could pick one that's based around my interests, my hobbies, the things that I like doing, the things that I like following. Or you can just pick a general purpose one and then you can just chat about anything, I guess. And I suppose if you're wanting a more traditional social media experience where it's a bit of everything, then you could start off with a general server. That might give you the more traditional social media experience. But as it says there, you can chat with anyone on Mastodon regardless of which server you choose. So what we've actually got on screen here is a list of categories. So if we go through these.
Selected. Category. All. Heading. General. Heading.
These categories are actually options that you can select. So ignore the fact that they're read as headings. I don't know why that is.
Regional. Heading. Art. Heading. Music. Heading. Journalism. Head. Activism. LGBT. Games. Tech. Heading.
Tech. I'm interested in tech, so we'll double tap on that one.
Selected.
This is where the accessibility of Mastodon's a bit inconsistent, because what's actually happened here is the server list has been filtered down to just ones that have the tech category in them, but we didn't get any announcement from VoiceOver, and if we keep flicking left and right, we'll still get the categories. So you want to tap somewhere on the screen to actually get to the server list.
Hatchadermio. Here we are trying to build a curated network of respectful professionals in the tech industry around the globe. Welcome anyone who follows the rules and needs a safe home or fresh start. We are hackers, professionals, enthusiasts, and are passionate about life, respect, and digital freedom.
So that's giving you a description of the server there. I think that one goes on for a bit longer. But that's giving you a description of the server. It does tell you how many members are in each server as well. And now that we've got to this area, we can flick left and right to go through the server list.
IARC Exchange, InfoSec server within the Fediverse, 21.6k, n. Tech Hub Social, a hub primarily for passionate technologists, but everyone is welcome, 50.8k, n.
That 50.8k, I think, is the number of members. I don't know what the N is at the end, but that server sounds good. That sounds like something I'd be interested in, so double tap.
Selected. Tech Hub Social, a hub primarily for...
Now again, this is where it's not very clear, so... That server's now selected, so we want to go to the bottom of the screen and tap on Next.
Next button. Next. Selected. Tech Hub Social. No, some ground rules. These are set and enforced by the Tech Hub Social moderators.
Okay, so it's now going to go through some ground rules.
Do not air for some ground. Sexually explicit or violent media must be marked as sensitive when posting. No racism, sexism, homophobia, transphobia, xenophobia, or casteism. No incitement of violence or promotion of violence.
These are pretty standard rules, really. So, and these will be slightly different based on the server that you select, because this is set by the server admins themselves. But, I mean, these all seem like pretty sensible rules, let's be honest. I think if I was going to join any server, I'd hope that they're following this sort of thing. So we'll go to the bottom of the screen to agree to these.
Next button. Let's get you set up on TechHub Social.
This, by the way, I haven't got my punctuation set to be very verbose, but this is actually techhub.social. So that's the URL of the server. So we're on a page where it says, let's get you set up.
Edit button. Pop-up button.
That edit button is to edit your profile photo. So you can add a profile photo here. I'm going to skip that for now.
Display name. Text field. Username. Text field. At TechHub Social. Email. Text field. Password. Secure text field. Your password needs at least 8 characters. Back. Button. Next. Dimmed. But. Next. Dimmed.
Okay, so we've got on that screen the edit button for the profile photo. And then you choose a display name, a username. And then next to that, it said at techhub.social. So your username would be whatever we enter here. And then at techhub.social, a bit like an email address. And then email address and password. So pretty standard stuff. So I'm going to fill these in. And I've got my Bluetooth keyboard here just to speed things
up. Let's get you set up on TechHub Social. Display username. Display name.
Oops.
Text field. Insertion point at end.
So display name, I'm just going to put my name.
Username. Text field. Callum Stoneman. Character mode.
So that's my
insertion
display name.
Point at end.
Let's now move over to username.
Username. Text. Insertion point at end.
So I've done Callum Stoneman, all one word.
At TechHub Social. Email. Text field.
I'm now going to put
insertion
in
point
my
at end.
Email address. If I move on, I'm going to set a password.
Next. One last thing. Tap the link we emailed to you to verify your account.
So, it's now sent me an email. We won't hear this come through because I've got my Do Not Disturb on, but if we come out of this...
Mastodon. Mail.
Pop over to my emails.
Button.
So that's it. I've now got an account on TechHub Social. So my username is now Callum Stoneman at techhub.social. And we're on our main timeline now. So if we have a flick through.
Logo button. Settings. Button. Find people to follow. Button. Empty list.
It's empty. Now this is where the kind of customizable element of Mastodon comes in, because it's, normally on a traditional social media platform, you would have had things like, fill in your name, your gender, your date of birth, where you went to school, where you work, your pets, your mother's maiden name, your bank details. I'm only joking. Do not put your bank details on social media. You know, you'd have been asked for quite a lot of information, and it matches the things that you might be interested in and the people that you want to find. This isn't going to do that. It's down to you to kind of look for people and look for topics and people that you're interested in. But at this point, the accessibility of the Mastodon app is still quite hit and miss. So this is the point where we're now going to switch over to MetaText. So we'll come out of Mastodon.
MetaText.
There's MetaText. So let's double tap that.
MetaText. Text field. Is editing. Instance URL. Insertion point at start.
In order to get logged in, MetaText is now asking for the instance URL, which in this case is techhub, all one word, .social.
Login button. Login.
And click login.
Alert. MetaText wants to use TechHub Social to sign in.
That's fine.
This allow. Cancel. Continue. MetaText. Address. 10%. TechHub. Email address. Text field. Email address.
Now this is going to ask me for my email address.
Insertion point at end.
And the password that I created for the TechHub Social account. So again, just type in my email address.
Password.
And it's
secure
now asking for my
field.
Mastodon
editing.
Password.
Login button. Authorization required. Heading level 3.
Okay, so we're now logged into MetaText and it's asking for authorization.
MetaText. Would like permission. If you do not trust it, review permission. Everything. Read and write access. Relationship. Read and write. Relationships. Push. Read and write access. Deny. Share. Button. Deny. Button.
So MetaText is asking for permission, and we can just allow this.
Authorize. Deny. Authorize. Button.
Click on authorize.
Authorize. Account menu. Button.
Now, this is why I like using MetaText, because the main timeline was empty. But there are actually three timelines on Mastodon. There's your home timeline, which I think is the people you follow. The local timeline, which is content from people on your server. And then there is the federated timeline, which is a more wider view of Mastodon. So that'll be from, you know, content from people on different servers. And I think those timelines, you can get to them in the Mastodon app, but I can't work out how to do it. But it's quite easy on MetaText, so...
Selected. Home. Button. One of three.
They're just tabs at the top, so you've got a home tab.
Local. Button. Two of three. Federated. Button. Three of three.
And then the federated one at the bottom there. So if I flick around the home timeline.
Compose toot. Button. Selected. Timelines. Tab. One of four.
There are other options within MetaText as well, like timelines, which is what we're on now. And then you can view things like your direct messages and notifications, and you can search for people. But as I said, this isn't intended to be a deep dive of Mastodon. So we'll just go to the local timeline because my home one is empty at the minute.
Confederated, local, button, selected, local, to.
And now we will see what's there from people on my server. And this is social media, so even if you've joined the same server, your content will be different. But let's just have a really quick flick through, see what we get.
Mark H. Ryan. One image, 5 seconds ago.
Okay, not a great start. An image with no alt text.
Mark H. Ryan. One image, 22 seconds ago. Mark H. Mark H. ONMS, comma. ONMSFT on Mastodon. New post. Valve to give away over 100 Steam Decks during the Game Awards on msf.com/news/valve-to-give. Link. Valve to give away over 100 Steam Decks during the Game Awards. ONMSFT.com. ONMSFT.com. 2 minutes ago.
Okay, so someone's put a post up there about giving away gaming headsets. Now, let's say I wanted to interact with that. Really nice thing about MetaText is that it's all in the actions rotor. So if I do a flick down.
Link. ONMSFT.com/.
I can go to that link.
Reply.
I could reply to it.
Boost.
Boost, which is kind of like retweeting.
Favorite.
Favorite.
Share.
I could share it via, I'm assuming via a link if I wanted to.
View author's profile. Copy text. Bookmark. Mute. Block. Report. Activate. Default.
It just makes it really nice and easy to interact with. So there you go. That is my Mastodon account set up. And I could carry on and go have a flick through some more of the content, and I could, you know, search for people. But as I said, I'm not going to try and do a full review of it, but hopefully that's enough to just get you started. And if you've been a bit confused by the main Mastodon app, then give MetaText a go. So I'm going to stick with this. I'm going to see how I like it. And if you've heard this and you found it useful and you set up your own Mastodon account, then give me a follow. Go to the search tab and just search for Callum Stoneman at techhub.social. You'll find me there.
Callum Stoneman there with his demonstration and introduction to the Mastodon social media network. Callum Stoneman, are you going to stick with it?
I think I'm going to, you know, stick with it for a little bit. As I said before, I think I'm not really fancying another social media platform, but I've got the account there now. So, you know, stick with it for a bit, see how it goes. I might end up, you know, build up a few people to follow on there, and you never know, I might quite like it. I think one thing I will say is the thing that trips people up, and I said this at the start of the demo and in the discussion we had earlier, the thing that kind of trips people up is this whole thing of choosing a server, and you've got to decide where you want your account to be. And that's actually not as big as it seems, because once you're on there, as long as servers are federated and, you know, connected with each other, then it just basically means that you'll see most stuff that is on your server, and in theory that's, you know, more stuff that you're interested in, but then you can go out easily enough and see other things, other topics, other people that aren't on your server. So, and you can move your account as well, which I didn't realize until I joined. So yeah, it's confusing still, and it's hard to explain, but it's not as big of a deal as I first thought initially.
But culturally it does feel quite different, doesn't it? Because it's not sort of run by one single company. each instance has its own sort of house rules and you know, conventions, but then they all kind of play together a little bit. It does have more a kind of a community feel about it, I think. Did you find that?
Yeah, it does. And, you know, if you've got if you really can't find a server that meets your interest or has the sort of rules that you want, then you can, if you're techie enough, then you can host your own. You know, you could always make your own and make your own rules and invite people to join you that way.
I have to confess, this week somebody sent me a link to a video on Instagram, and I clicked the link and I was popped into the browser, and it said to view this video, you need to get the Instagram app. And before I realized what I was doing, I'd done that. And then it just said to me, do you want to sign in using your Facebook account? And I just went, oh, yeah, go on then. And so within 30 seconds, I had an Instagram account. Never planned to, never wanted one. I was warned off Instagram by my son, because I think he views that as his digital space to play in. Don't you come on here, Dad, with all your dad stuff, you know. So, yeah, it's very, very easy. I think that's what the big companies have done, is to simplify it. And I guess that is the challenge for Mastodon, is to make it that simple.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, as we heard there, it doesn't kind of, once you're on, it's kind of up to you to find people. You know, it doesn't give you suggestions. It doesn't tell you, oh, you know, these are the friends that you might like, or these people, I don't know, works at the same place as you or went to the same school as you. It doesn't give you suggestions like that. And the reason for that is just the control and the privacy aspect. It's all down to you. You can tailor it as much as you want. You can see exactly what you want to see and not see what you don't want to see.
And Tasneem Arshad, I mean, you're a little bit sort of reluctant with social media. You're quite happy to sit on the sidelines and watch and see how this one plays out.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as you guys know, I'm not a massive social media fan. I do love it for all of its, you know, information and updates and, you know, groups and all the rest of it. But I'm not somebody who likes to sort of post every 5 seconds or whatever. Yeah, I'm much more of an in-person, traditional person.
Thanks both. Let us know, what social media do you use? Is it accessible? Why did you choose that particular platform? And what would make you move? techtalk@rnib.org.uk. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. One of the things you might decide to do over the holiday season is sit down and play a video game, either alone or with the family. And to guide us with making some choices about what games may work well for blind and partially sighted people is RNIB's very own Ben Breen, aka Sightless Combat. Ben, welcome back to Tech Talk. You are, of course, our... let me get this right. Accessible gaming immersive technology research officer.
Yep, almost there. But we're just shortening it to accessible gaming officer now, I think. So
brilliant. Excellent. Oh, well, that's easier for me.
Much easier.
Yeah. Good to have you back on the program. I mean, of course, before we get into this, I just want to sort of nod to the accessible gaming symposium that we covered earlier in the year. That was, I think, one of the highlights for me of Tech Talk this year, and also just technology generally, seeing how the gaming industry are having dialogue with people like yourself about making video gaming more accessible.
Yeah, it was an amazing event to be a part of. Thank you for having me back on the program, by the way. I really appreciate it. But the symposium itself was great fun, seeing so many people from all across the industry gathered together as part of a hybrid format, so both in person and online. Was absolutely phenomenal, and the responses we've had have been absolutely brilliant as well. So yeah, it's great to see the industry interested in RNIB's work and RNIB looking to move forward with various elements of that into the future.
Awesome. Well, do keep us posted about further developments. We'll be watching on with great interest in 2023 and beyond. So holidays are coming up, so hopefully a little bit of free time, a bit of downtime, perhaps some more gaming time, Ben. Perhaps what are you going to be playing over the holidays?
I will very likely be continuing my Give Me God of War run, so the highest difficulty possible on the recently released God of War Ragnarok. I've needed minimal sighted assistance, mostly for puzzles, but that's kind of understandable given the way the accessibility implementations have worked. If you read my review as well as others, you will know that, you know, puzzles were a problem and arguably still are, but the fact remains that it's a very fun combat experience and a great narrative as well. So if you have the sighted assistance for that, I would recommend, even just on balanced story, whatever difficulty you choose to play on, doesn't matter, there's no judgment here, then give that game a go, definitely. If you have a PS4 or a PS5, because the DualSense features are greatly enhancing the experience of that game, then I'd recommend checking that out if you have the cash to afford it.
Okay, so that's God of War on PlayStation.
God of War Ragnarok, to be specific, on PlayStation 4 and 5. You can get it on either platform or as a bundle for both, if memory serves.
Fantastic. Well, I'm keen to hear your recommendations. I just got roped into upgrading my son's FIFA because he loves playing the EA Games football. I think it's the last year it's going to be called FIFA as well. There's talk about...
I believe so. Yeah, there's talk about name changes.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not a game I can really play with him, but aesthetically I do enjoy the way they've mixed the commentary and the crowd and the songs,
yeah,
and all of that, and the way they do the sort of the highlights at the end of games and things like that is very authentic. And you'd have a hard time if you were listening from the next room to be able to tell whether, you know, he was actually watching football or playing football as a video game. And of course the World Cup you know, sort of been happening, and so that's obviously got everybody talking about football. So what are some of your recommendations, Ben? What would you suggest for folk, you know, what's in the zeitgeist at the moment? What are people playing, talking about?
There's a lot in terms of mobile stuff that's come out recently. So there's a game called Evidence Number 111, which has come out recently on mobile. That's a sort of narrative driven choice based adventure of sorts. I've played part of it already. It's actually really well put together. Not usually my sort of thing. I normally go for more action oriented titles myself, but that's good. That's on mobile.
Is that a mainstream game, or is that specifically for blind and partially sighted people?
You could argue it's both, in the sense that I believe it's just audio, but you could also say it's mainstream because there are, you know, star actors in it as well. I think Rosamund Pike was one of the names mentioned as part of that, and there's likely other people as well.
When you say a choice-based adventure, is that one of those things where it's like, you know, do you fight the dragon or run away, that kind of thing?
Pretty much, yeah, but the narrative can take turns based on, you know, what you choose, which is quite interesting. So you'll choose who to speak to, you'll choose what to take with you on various escapades, that kind of thing. It's quite an interesting, it's a well put together story as well. Yeah, that's a mobile based thing.
Speaking of mobile, you know, the game that just won't die is Dice World. Like, my wife just still on an hourly basis, it feels like to me, is playing Dice World.
I must confess, I've never played it. It's a game that's never really personally taken my interest, but that might just be me. But in terms of other mobile stuff, though, there's always, if you want to utilize, I believe they call it the power of the human mind or the power of the imagination, the various choice of series. So if you don't know what these are essentially interactive novels that are fully text-based, voiceover accessible. You can try demos of these voiceover, and I believe they're on Android as well. They're on PC too, but I've primarily played them on mobile over the years. There's various price ranges from, you know, £3.99 to £6.99 for some of them, maybe even lower than those prices. But there's ones like Slammed, which is a wrestling themed one, Zombie Exodus, which I made the mistake of playing at about midnight once, and that honestly kind of freaked me out, because the writing is that good that you start hearing things, and that's a bit unnerving. And there's other ones like Choice of Robots, Creatures Such as We, which is a very interesting sort of reflective narrative, and Tin Star, which is a western, a very well written western in my personal opinion, that is also very long. It just keeps going in the best way possible.
So how do they compare to the old interactive fiction games? Is it a similar idea then?
Not really, because with the odd interactive fiction games, if you're thinking like, I don't know, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is a classic example. There's no text parser or anything. You don't have to type words in, unless, of course, you're counting typing your character's name in. which is usually the only thing you have to do, maybe codes in certain games. But with these, you use radio buttons to make your choices. So to go with your old example, well, your previous example, I should say, you'd have, what do you want to do? And you'd have one radio button that says fight the dragon, one that says run away, one that says pull that sword out of the ground because that might be useful. You know,
so, I'm running away just in case anyone's interested.
I don't blame you. But yeah, there's you know, so that's how it works. But the key thing is, you know, always pay attention to what you're reading, because there are instances where one tiny misstep can actually give you different endings. I'm not going to say which game, but one of those games I've mentioned, I didn't pay enough attention to it the first time round, and actually got the alternative ending, not the one I actually wanted to go for in the first place. So I then had to replay a small amount of the game to actually see the ending I'd wanted originally. So always be attentive when you're playing these games, because they will try occasionally and trip you up.
What would you suggest for group play? What would you like for a family, maybe, you know, Christmas afternoon, you know, get everybody round, something like that? What's the sort of the modern, you know, equivalent? I remember we last year got, I think it was Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? So my son could see the questions. He was shouting those out and then we could all have a go at those.
I mean, I've not been in many situations where family gaming is a common thing, at least for not for a while. There's definitely an argument to be made for any game on, say, the Xbox platform or on Windows that supports Copilot, which is the feature where two controllers simultaneously act as one. So say you and I were playing a game together and you weren't, I don't know, maybe you weren't confident in doing the movement, for instance, then I could take that role and you could do everything else, or vice versa. You know, so it can be delegated based on preference. So say I only want to reload and that's my job, then that's me. You know, I can just press one button and have it reload and then just watch the rest of the game play out via, you know, a local person sitting in the same room doing that. But there are ways to do things like that online as well, in terms of you know, software and hardware solutions. They get a bit more advanced and a bit more complicated to work through, and they don't always work in the way you'd intend. But you know, you could always utilize those kinds of solutions to play games together as well. Even in terms of you know, things like you know, split screen co-op games, you could have, so things like Minecraft Dungeons, you could work with as a family. You could have you know, as long as a sighted player is your main sort of point of focus, you could teleport to them, so you don't have to navigate through the rather convoluted level design, which is a shame because that game had a lot of potential to be accessible initially, and that the navigation side of it hasn't thus far been rectified. But that's an idea. And of course, you've got games like Motorsport, where you could maybe you know, race against each other with, you know, assists as rule sets. But there's nothing that I can really think of that's, you know, natively standing out to me as of now, which is a shame because there is a market for it, definitely, with things like the handheld stuff like the Switch, which doesn't have enough accessibility yet to necessarily be justified. I mean, I know people who use optical character recognition with capture cards to play Switch games. I personally don't own a Switch yet, but that's partly because justifying the cost of one versus the amount of accessible content is quite difficult, because there's quite a limited range at the moment. But who knows? Yeah, we might see that improve.
Give us a bit of a steer on recent releases. I mentioned FIFA 23, which you could potentially use Copilot with.
I mean, you could use Copilot with any game. That's the main selling point. So even stuff like Callisto Protocol, which isn't out yet, Dead Space Remake, which is coming out next year. I know sometimes people buy pre-orders for Christmas, that kind of stuff. Of course, we haven't mentioned The Last of Us Part 1. And I don't know how we've gone this long without mentioning it, because that's a game that, you know, if people wanted to, say, watch the equivalent of a movie, but have a person who's old enough to, you know, to play those games without sight, play it through. That's got audio described cutscenes. It is a challenge, definitely. Part 2 was a challenge, but Part 1 arguably has even harder elements in places, in terms of at least some of the encounters. But that's a great game to go for.
So just for those that haven't been following this with Last of Us, Part 2 sort of released with lots of accessibility features, but then Part 1 was remastered.
Yeah, Part 1 is a remake of the original game released about 9 years ago now, and it's been remastered for PS4, and then it's the recent Part 1, as it's now called, because it was just called The Last of Us before. The Last of Us Part 1 is a full ground-up remaster of the original game, but it includes all the accessibility stuff from Part 2, so the navigation assist, the lock-on aim, the narrative menus and UI, all sorts of stuff, and audio description and cutscenes, which Part 2 didn't include. So you can play the entire game start to finish without assistance. I actually did that as part of my review, and that was a lot of fun. And, it's not a release that's out just yet. There is a demo of this, a little game called Stories of Blossom from Softleaf Studios. It's a sort of more family-friendly oriented title. As I say, there is a demo on Steam, and I believe that's going to stay up relatively permanently. And it's sort of a point and click, but with audio description and other accessibility features involved. So you can navigate the interface with, you know, your arrow keys, hit space on things, and you'll, you know, use items with other items or with NPCs, that kind of stuff. It's quite a cute game is the best way I can describe it. But yeah, it looks really promising. I think, it's as far as I know, it's coming out next year. But there, as I say, there's a demo if you want to have a look at that as an interesting idea.
Lots to look forward to, Ben. Where can we find reviews and recommendations for accessible games?
I mean, we are looking at ways to disseminate that information, particularly I can only speak as a person with no sight whatsoever, whereas, you know, there might be other options if you have, say, partial vision, you know, low vision, however you want to describe it, usable and or residual vision, let's say. If you have that level of vision, your options will very likely be much greater and much more diverse. But, you know, I post information on Twitter under as Sightless Combat. I know RNIB will almost inevitably post information when it becomes available as well. We're working on that too, you know, making those pieces of information easier to find. Stay tuned on that front, and there might be updates there.
Yeah, AppleViz might be a good place to look as well.
AppleViz, if you're looking for mobile stuff particularly, is a good place to look. Because, as I say, mobile games are good when you just want to curl up in bed of an evening and, you know, sleep off the festive food that you've decided to engage in. Also, actually, I will shout out a festively themed game called In the Service of Mrs. Claus. It's a choice of game. And if you type that into Google, you'll find out where to play it. Because there's the traditional choice of label and there's the hosted games label. And off the top of my head, I can't think which label that game comes under. But that took me a while to get through, and it was really, really good. So if you want a festively themed game, that's one that comes to mind as well.
That's a great place to finish, Ben. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful Christmas, and we look forward to hearing from you in 2023.
You too. Have a good Christmas, and Happy New Year as well for those of you that celebrate it.
Thank you. Well, thanks again for joining us here on Tech Talk. We really appreciate your company. Don't forget, you can hear the programme first on a Tuesday at 1 p.m. UK on RNIB Connect Radio, heard across the UK on Freeview Channel 730 on FM in Glasgow, and of course around the world on your smart devices, or as you might have done, pick up the podcast, which drops every Friday. Do tune in next time when blind soprano Sandra Gaya will be speaking with Native Instruments, and I'll be setting up my Christmas lights. Callum Stoneman, Tasni Marshad, thank you both.
Thank you, and see you all soon.
Thank you. Bye for now.
And from me, Dave Williams, and the rest of the Tech Talk team, bye for now.